I watched the part three segment of Crystal Lake Memories this afternoon, but
since you messaged me that, you sort of reminded me. I was like, I have that, and I was like, I found it, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll rewatch that real quick. It's funny. It feels like the video version of everything that Wikipedia tells you. So I imagine Wikipedia stole it from the book and the film documentary version, you know, and not the other way around, right? So.
And I perused your little books you sent. I didn't have time to look at them a lot.
Yeah, I don't know that there's much to it. Like, you know, I'm not going to read them, but like I did look at the last pages because they kept, you know, they keep talking about all the alternate endings. So mm-hmm. I was just curious. Like, I kind of perused like the last pages just to see like, well, what exactly is different about these, you know? And it's like some, you know, I guess the dream sequence in the 82 book is the one with the quote unquote lost scene where, you know, Jason comes out and lops her head off and then she wakes up or some shit. You know what I mean? Like it's all a dream or whatever. So, and I guess, you know, in this, the theatrical version, it's, you know, Mrs. Voorhees comes up out of the lake and then it's all a dream, you know? So it's like, okay.
That, and then, I mean, we'll talk about it on the show, but like that and, Jason chasing Chris and then leaving her alive always confused me. Like even when I was a little kid, I was like, well, Jason would have killed her. Like, what happened? And then you're like, oh, scene missing. Well, maybe it's good they took that out because Jason's not a rapist. He's just a serial killer.
Right, right. So, I mean, I didn't come up with any synopsis or whatever. I don't know if you want to do a piddly dink, like one-liner or whatever, but I just kind of, you know, was
I have nothing prepared.
And everything. Okay.
You can just say, Friday the 13th, part 3 is in 3D. Jason kills people.
With your powers combined, we are fan holes. Go,
fan holes. Can't believe there's a chat room big enough to hold all of our present bodies. Wow.
Of all the things I missed about the show, I miss Tony being wrong always.
We've already got a me. We don't need another me.
Oh boy, a Bashir episode.
Ah yes, Derek. Lover of lobster women, defender of Starfire's fidelity.
I just want to know, who is the consultant? Could he be?
No! I have no heart!
Nobody can relate to a talking cat that eats lasagna.
I'll do it, but I want to be immediately killed afterwards.
Derek, in your Derek lair, do you have a list of that tells you like how to take down the other fan holes? Should we like go crazy?
How does my stupid voice sound?
You sound beautiful.
Like 10 times sexier. Good job.
No one gets us because we don't explain it.
Hey guys, welcome back to another Hockey Mask-rific Creepy Lake-tastic episode of Fan Holes Podcast. Hey, what's up, guys? This is Derek WC. I'm going to be one of your hosts tonight, but joining me at Camp Crystal Lake is one of my fellow fan holes. Why don't you give a shout-out and let everybody know who's joining me in the shaggy carpeted van and smoking bongs tonight.
Hey, this is Justin.
Yeah, so we're here to talk about what how old is this?
40
years old. 40 years old. We're here to talk about the 40th 82. 40 years old. Whoa. Okay. So we're here to talk about We're here to talk about Friday the 13th part 3 in 3D. And I guess by now you know the routine. We're into doing these anniversaries because anniversaries don't change. They don't get canceled. They don't get held up by pandemics or Russian invasions of Ukraine. We like anniversary shows. So we are, and I think it's fair to say, I mean, I think of the two of us, Justin is the bigger Friday the 13th fan, the bigger Jason fan, but I do have a lot of fondness for Friday the 13th in 3D in particular. So when this came up as a potential anniversary show, I think we both kind of went, ooh, ooh, you know, and we're like, we'd want to talk about it. I don't think we need to tell you, like, what happens in Friday the 13th Part 3, you know? I mean, you know, some kids go back to the cabin at Crystal Lake, and Jason starts killing them, and, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the details, but this is the, you know, this is the one that put Jason on the map, right? This is the one where he first wears the hockey mask, and it's in 3D, so that, you know, started a whole slew of, you know, just like Avatar started the awful 3D craze in the, I don't know, whenever Avatar came out, and then every fucking movie was in 3D. This movie came out in 3D, and not every movie, but it did spawn a whole host of 3D imitators, you know, 3D people that wanted to capitalize on the craze, you know, so there were tons and tons of 3D movies. Should we talk about, I guess, should we do like an icebreaker? Like, should we talk about how we first came to Friday the 13th and Jason and all that stuff? Like, how did you, I mean, I imagine you watched a lot of these, but did you, I mean, did you see any of these in the theater? Did you all watch them on, you know, home video? Like, how did you come to Jason and Friday the 13th?
I think I mentioned this on a previous show, but the only ones I saw in the theater were the remake and Freddy vs. Jason. My exposure to these was like renting them, or if they were on like USA or TBS late at night for some, you know, marathon or something, like we'd always watch them. Like, my cousin was a big fan of horror movies, and he was like, oh, we gotta watch this, and like, he was a big horror fan. I think he eventually kind of grew out of these kind of movies, but I never did. And I was thinking about this the other day. I'm pretty sure the first one of these films I ever saw was Part 2, because
okay.
I remember just thinking, you know, like, Part 2, he's got the bag on his head, and I was like, well, that's really, it's really weird, because he's just got, like, one eye hole, and I'm like, well, doesn't that one eye hole, you know, hinder him in his mass killings? But but then, yeah, like, I think I must have saw, like, Part 2, and then immediately saw Part 3, like, right after that, because I was like, ooh, yeah, this is even better. I've always had a soft spot for Part 3. Like, Part 3 is one of my favorites. Like, 3 and 6, I think 6 probably is my favorite, but I like Part 3 a lot, too. And, you know, like you said, it's the introduction of the mask and some elements that kind of go throughout the franchise, and there's, you know, as you're a kid, you know, there's the violence part, and then there's also the titillation part, which
right, was right,
a, right. kind of a big deal.
Well, and I think the Friday the 13th, well, I maybe that's not true. I mean, I guess there's titillation in the Freddy movies too, but I always felt like the Friday the 13th movies had that a little more strongly, you know, the TNA or the pretty girls or whatever, you know, that kind of thing.
So what, do you remember which one of these you saw first, and did you see this film in the theater?
So, it's an interesting story, because, like, unlike you, I wasn't super keen on Jason. You know, Freddy was what I really majorly got into, and if you think about this, I didn't watch a Freddy movie in the theater until The Dream Child. So that was kind of way late in Freddy's run, so The Dream Child and Freddy's Dead, and then, you know, New Nightmare, and those were the movies I saw of Freddy's in the theater. So somewhere in between there, they came out with Jason Goes to Hell. And by that point, we were kind of big into, you know, horror and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I could, you know, I don't know. It wasn't rebellious for me, because I think I was allowed to see most of that stuff when I felt like seeing it, I guess, if that makes sense. You know, I think there were moments in my childhood where I'm pretty sure my parents were watching movies like these, and they told me, ah, you wouldn't like this. And it was probably a good call, because I was probably not ready for it. But when I was ready for it, nobody really stopped me from watching them, you know, like, and so I watched a bunch of them, you know, like the Freddy movies and everything. And I sort of tried to branch out. I think I watched a lot of these edited, heavily edited on TV at first. Like, I seem to remember a lot of the local channels played Part 4 a lot. Like I guess I just remember getting caught up in the whole, you know, Corey Feldman, little kid, you know, dressing up as Jason, like that whole movie and everything. So I remember seeing that a lot. I remember seeing Halloween 2 for some reason, heavily edited on TV. That would play a lot. And I would go back, you know, and rent Freddy Krueger movies, and then maybe I would, I don't know, I sort of dabbled, but like I said, I wasn't like super into it. And Jason's Dead was the first Friday the 13th movie I actually watched in the theater. And then we got all excited because, you know, Freddy's hand comes out at the end to pull down the mask. And this was before Freddy, you know, this was long before Freddy versus Jason was an actual thing. And I remember seeing that because I was still in high school, I think. And we drove down to see it. And we were just, the end of it, like, it wasn't a great movie, but the end of it, we were like, oh, fucking shit, it's all, like, Freddy's gonna fucking fight Jason, like, we were all fucking happy about it, like, whatever, we thought it was the coolest shit ever. And I guess, I was trying to figure out the timetable of this, but if you flash forward to, so high school, I go to college at Loyola Marymount. There were plenty of people that were way more into horror movies than I was, so I may have been, you know, I think I was exposed a little bit more to certain things, like certain people loved Halloween, so I got a little more exposure to that. And, you know, there were other things, like, you know, I think my mom had already been into Hellraiser, so we watched that. And you know, I ended up, you know, watching more of those movies in college because there were other people that liked the entire franchise. So I think I probably watched like the first Hellraiser with my mom. And then when I went to college, I had friends that loved that franchise too. So I ended up watching, you know, like 2 and 3. And I think I saw fucking Hellraiser fucking 4, the worst fucking movie ever, right in the theater. And I was so fucking mad because, you know, I thought it was going to be Hellraiser in space. And it was like in space for like 2 minutes. And I was like, this is what a jip, you know? And I was like super mad. So I remember seeing Hellraiser 4 in the theater, ironically, but not, you know, the previous movies I all saw on VHS or home video or whatever. So it's kind of similar with Jason, but I wasn't exactly sure of the timetable on this, but I watched the audio commentary I have on these mini pack DVDs or whatever, because I bought this DVD set in 2004, and it's the one that comes with the two, like, it's like two movies are in one little mini case, but then it's like there's four little mini cases, and so it's basically all the 8 Paramount movies. So not Jason's Dead, but, you know, Friday the 13th 1 through 8, like ending with Jason Goes to Manhattan or whatever. And when I watched the audio commentary, one of the actors that was talking about stuff mentioned, and this is what, because I couldn't remember exactly when it was. I knew it was after I graduated Loyola, but I couldn't figure out, like, I was like, was this before I worked at the casino? Was this after I worked at the casino? And I think the way I'm going to tell this story is, I think this was one of the last things I did before I went to work for the casino, which makes it 2002, early 2002. And the reason why I can do that is this DVD set came out in like 2004. And so I'm assuming the commentary was written around that, you know, was recorded around that time frame. I don't think they were, you know, doing it months and months and months in advance or something like that. Like, I imagine that commentary was recorded for the 2004 box set. And so one of the actors says they had a 3D film festival at the Newark 2 years ago. So 2004 minus 2002. I was at that film festival. I got to see Friday the 13th in 3D. It was, you had these plastic type, you know, I guess I say it like you've never worn them before, but like it was similar to how, you know, modern 3D, you know how modern 3D glasses, they're not like red and blue on one side, you know, they're, yep, just kind of like a clear plexiglass thing. It was very similar to that, except for I think they were not as big, you know, like they probably were more the size of the old paper 3D glasses, but they were you know, they were still clear, you know, like, and so you put them on and everything, but then I think at the end of it, you know, you had to, you know, put them in a bin or something when you were finished with them, because they actually cost money and they didn't want people to take them home, just like you do with 3D glasses today, right? You put it in a little bin or whatever happens to it, and probably nobody goes to 3D movies anymore now, because you get a bunch of contagion from wearing fucking 3D goggles or whatever, but the point is, I went and saw it in 3D. It was a packed house. It was a... This is akin to how I described my experience with Halloween 7, you know, and the whole Busta Rhymes and that whole thing, you know, like, trick-or-treat, motherfucker! Like, and everybody fucking erupts and thinks it's, like, the greatest thing ever and goes, woo, 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 and all this stuff. This was a fully packed audience. It was like seeing people chuckle at Starscream cracking wise in Transformers the movie and going, this is so weird to see it with an audience and see everybody have reactions, and it's just really fun. And then the fact that it was like actually, you know, the thing that was the attraction was this was the headlining movie at a 3D film festival. So I was trying to remember the other movies that I went and saw. And the reason why I was like, this must have been before I worked for the goddamn casino, because I was like, I could easily watch whatever I wanted. You know what I mean? And I'm sure they all played at different times of the day and different days of the week. So I was like, you know, I was like, I couldn't have been that occupied, you know, because at that point, it was kind of this weird nebulous thing where I had graduated. I took a couple jobs and had different odds and ends where I worked for a law firm and I did some things here and there. But for the most part, my main quote unquote job was, you know, whatever, you know, show I was doing or whatever short film I was working on or whatever student film I was working on and stuff like that. So it's like that was my quote unquote work. Do you know what I mean? And that was not always every single day, you know what I mean? And even if it was, usually the rehearsals for theater stuff was usually in the evenings. And so, I, you know, during the day, I could go out and, you know, see these films and do whatever. And so they had this film festival at the New Art. And then I was trying to, again, I was trying to remember, you know, exactly what, you know, what the theater was called. Because, you know, I mean, sometimes it's funny because I went there so many times and I had friends that actually lived in that neighborhood. So, you know, in my mind's eye, I could see like exactly where it was. It's like, oh yeah, we drove down Sepulveda and then it was like somewhere in Westwood or some shit. So I guess it was like Sepulveda and Santa Monica Boulevard-ish is where this theater is. And I was trying to figure out, you know, on like Google Maps, like exactly where it was and stuff. And then I looked up some stuff. So there's like some cool, I mean, if you look up the New Art, like online, you'll see a bunch of photos of what the theater looks like. And then there's like, actually, I found this nice little blog spot or whatever that had a big write up on like the history of it. And I'm sort of linking Justin to it as I say these things, right? But it's like, you know, it had the little, I always remember it having the red paint. And then, you know, typically when I was there, they would always have some kind of showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. But then, you know, you'd have various, you know, sometimes it was, you know, like kind of independent, you know, art films and things like that that would play there. But, you know, they had these film festivals, and this one in particular was 3D. And then the other movie I distinctly remember seeing, which I thought was like the greatest thing ever at the time when I watched it, was they had, I think this is like Demi Moore's, like one of her first movies or whatever, but it's called Parasite. And it was also a 3D movie. So one of the many movies, you know, capitalizing on that 3D film craze after Friday the 13th made a ton of money was this movie, Parasite. And I think the only, like, real redeeming quality of it is it's a goofy sci-fi thing where, like, some critter is in, like, somebody's body or whatever, and then the guy goes after Demi Moore, and she looks really cute and everything. Yeah. And it was like sitting there, you're going, oh man, she's like 18 and really cute. Yeah. I mean, I'm just making it up. I don't know how young she really was, but you know, she it was her earliest movie. She looked really cute. And of course, getting to see the movies in actual 3D was just like one of the biggest treats ever. And then on top of that, it was one of these things where because it was in LA and because it was a film festival, and I guess I kind of alluded to this with the commentary, but you know, one of the actors on the commentary that I was getting the time frame from, that, you know, that I listened to, you know, he was there. Like, he was there at that screening. And I remember specifically, so I think the guy that was talking on the commentary is the guy that plays Rick, the boyfriend or whatever, the tall guy who gets his eye popped out or whatever. So I'm pretty sure it was that guy talking on the commentary. So he was definitely there. I know the guy who played Shelley was definitely there. And then I want to say, like, maybe Steve Miner was there. I don't know. I know we're saying, like, this movie is 40 years old. That would have been 20 years ago, so forgive me that I don't remember all the details, but for sure, like, I think there were at least three people there. I don't think any of the female members of the cast were there, but I could be wrong. Like, they might have been. I just, you know, it was one of those things where you talked about watching the Crystal Lake documentary, and it's like, there wasn't anything out there like that at that time, so there was a bit of disconnect where you're seeing these people 20 years later, and you, unless somebody gets up on stage and they introduce them and they say, this guy played Jason, or this guy played Shelley, or this guy played, you know, whoever, right? Then maybe the light bulb clicks and you go, oh, that's what he looks like now. But, you know, maybe, you know, like I said, there might have been some disconnect where I wasn't sure who everybody was, because maybe they all didn't do a Q&A, but there were plenty of people. They had like the first row or something, you know, or I forget what it was, but they had like a bunch of seats that were reserved. And so, like, when you went in, you could sit anywhere you want except for these taped off seats. And the taped off seats were for like the cast and crew and whoever that were also going to watch this and participate in the Q&A after the movie ended. So long, long winded story. But the answer is, yes, technically, you know, I guess 20 years after it was in the theaters, I got to see a theatrical screening of it, and it was actually in 3D, and that, I think, makes them, you know, I mean, it's a tough watch without the 3D, right? Like without the actual 3D and a bunch of audience people, like, giggling about the 3D effects and screaming at the eyeballs and, you know, chuckling at every, you know, joke or whatever was going on in that film. But having that kind of audience experience where everybody was, you know, laughing or screaming or, you know, just kind of hooting and hollering, you know, being a rowdy Saved by the Bell, you know,
girl, don't go back in the barn, no,
yeah, you know, kind of that whole thing, right, that is kind of pre-recorded, you know, hooting and hollering type audience, right, except for it wasn't pre-recorded. You were there and part of it, and it was just really fun. Yeah.
How good was the 3D? Because, you know, you mentioned the 3D craze of like the 2010s, and I saw a lot of those movies in 3D, but there were only like a handful I felt really worked for me. Like, did the 3D for this, was it good for you? Or
this, I mean, I think, you know, some of the, you have to be forgiving of the story or the circumstance, but if you're talking about the technology, like, yeah, I mean, they had a camera that worked with 3D. They spent a lot of time trying to get the shots, and it was all this kind of goofy shit of, you know, she's handing the guy the joint, and you see the joint close up because it's like her hand, and the joint is like coming out of the screen at you. Or
did you feel like the yo-yo was gonna hit you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know about hitting, you know, but they talk about the story where, you know, Jason walks out with the hockey mask for the first time, and he's got the harpoon or whatever, and that harpoon, you know, it's the same idea, like that was done specifically for the 3D effect, so that when he shoots it, you know, you probably have that moment where you want to, you know, you want to slightly dodge or whatever, you know what I mean? Like it's not, you know, I don't want to oversell it, right? Like it's not like I don't know the difference between, you know, movie 3D and real life, but if you're asking me if the technology was well done, I think it was. And then also I think that the other thing that was always bad about 3D back in the 80s, cause I did watch some 3D movies, and I think specifically I had my dad take me to,
Orin Legend of the Star Chaser, which I will still argue is the best Star Wars prequel that was ever made. But that film, that animated like film, it was like this thing where my dad took me to it because he knew I would enjoy it. But one thing he always said about it, and I guess it changed across time, I guess, but you know, usually when you went to a 3D movie, you had to wear the glasses for the entire fucking movie. And those red and blue lenses, like, you know, it's something my dad always said. He's like, oh, I get a headache when I put those on and that whole thing. And a lot of times he would end up taking them off. And since it was cartoon, he didn't give a shit. He probably just, you know, went to sleep and I enjoyed it, right? But if it was, you know, a legit movie that he was trying to watch, like, he was always not super keen on it because he felt like his head hurt. And then I remember when we went and saw Freddy's Dead, he was more amenable to the idea because you only put on the glasses for like 10 minutes of the climactic finale. You know what I mean? And then to him, he's like, ah, well, that didn't hurt my head, so that was no big deal. And when you jump forward to this film in 2002, and then you're talking about Avatar and all these other movies, right, that you go see in 3D, I don't think that, I mean, I think the way those clear glasses work, like, I don't think they, you know, F with your brain or hurt your head as much. I mean, at least that's my take on it. It doesn't, the illusion it's trying to perpetuate on your eyes does not mess with you as much as it did back in the 80s, in my estimation or my experience. So, I guess what I'm saying is, like, this version with those specific glasses to me worked more, you know, it worked better than anything that would have worked for me previously, including going to see like Orin Legend of the Star Chaser, right? Because that's my other frame of reference for like 3D movies or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it was the whole experience was a lot of fun, like, you know, seeing the actors and seeing people react to it and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I guess technically, yes, I did. I watched Friday the 13th Part 3, and that's why this, I'm a little more fond of this particular film in the franchise, like, more so than maybe most of the others. I mean, I don't know that I necessarily, I'm not gonna, like, do a knockdown, drag-out fight over which one of these Friday the 13th movies is my favorite, but I will say, like, I this is one of the ones I enjoy the most, and I think mainly because I'm a latecomer to the franchise, you know, like, I think I was the guy that was like, oh, who's Mrs. Voorhees, and Jason wore a bag on his head, like, because I think the first time I watched all of these movies in chronological order and saw all of them for the first time was in 2004. You know, it was like I got these little mini DVD cases, and it was like Halloween or something like that, and I sat down and I just started watching all of them from start to finish. So it was like then I got a complete picture of things, and you know, so my, I don't know, my rankings or likes or dislikes of these films, like, probably doesn't hold a lot of weight, right? Because I'm just kind of, you know, hey, I like Jason and the Hockey Mask, I like 3 because I got to see it in the theater in 3D, and then, you know, I'd say I think 4 is pretty good, and you know, there's things I enjoy about 6 and 7, you know, and the, I don't know, the other ones are kind of like I can take or leave them, you know.
Yeah, I've only watched Jason Goes to Hell a handful of times. Whenever I sit down and rewatch these, I'm just like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to watch that one again.
And, you know, I mean, just because of who I am, you know, I like Jason X, even though everybody hates it, because Jason Inspires.
I don't hate it. I just think it's a little wacky doodle, but in a fun way.
Jason Inspires!
Weekends are a good time to escape to the woods. Unless the weekend begins with Friday the 13th. Because 13 is an unlucky number. But out here, so are 1 through 12. because these are Jason's woods. And nobody leaves them alive. Friday the 13th, part 3, in 3D. Jason, you can't fight him. You can't stop him. And now, you can't even keep him on the screen. Friday the 13th, part 3, in 3D. Now, when it comes to killing in Jason's woods, Jason will come to you. Friday the 13th, part 3, in 3D. A new dimension in terror. It will scare you. Count on it.
That's kind of my, I guess, history with it or whatever. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you want to talk about like the tropes and the characters or different things like that? Like I was always laughing because they talk about, you know, Shelley's like the nerd, right? And he's the one who brings the hockey mask and all this other stuff, but he's got his little box of, you know, I guess squibs and tricks and, you know, makeup to make it look like somebody's hatcheted him in the head and all this other stuff, which is all believable that that could fit in that little box. But then, like, part of me is kind of like, is that box like the fucking TARDIS? Because I was like, how did he fit that harpoon gun in the TARDIS? Like, how did he fit all that shit? Like, you know, the wetsuit? Like, what? Like, how does all that shit, you know, is it like the fucking Flash's ring? Like, it's like, he's, you know, I was like, is that box magic? Like, what?
He's one of those movie characters that you just want to, like, reach through and shake and be like, oh, come on, man. Like, don't act like this. Like, you kind of like get the feeling that even though he's such a awkward guy, that after the grocery store thing where he lay, like, where him and the what's her name had to like flee from the bikers or whatever, like, after that, you're kind of like, okay, well, maybe he's got somewhat of a chance with this chick. Like, he, you know, like,
right,
like
right,
there could
right.
be something. But then he keeps like, he reaches up out of the little lagoon or whatever and grabs her foot and she freaks out and you're just,
well,
you just want to be like, see, come on, dude, like, you could have had a chance and then you fucked it up and then you got murdered.
Well, but see, I think you're missing like what the chicken and the egg, because it's like she has that sequence with him where it's like he thinks the same thing that you think, like, maybe I do have a shot with this girl, like, we had a connection, I saved her from these ridiculously campy bikers in the convenience store, and we had a moment, right? Like, the, you know, it wasn't Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock in Speed, but, you know, it was kind of like the lesser version of that, right? There's some adrenaline pumping and they had a little adventure and she's like, ah, Shelley kicked ass, like, he's not so bad after all. And everybody's like, way to go, Shelley. And you're thinking to yourself, oh yeah, like, look, you don't have to, I don't know, stand out by doing all this wacky, you know, horror, you know, Andy Kaufman fucking bullshit, right? You can just be Shelley and be cool. But then he does try to sort of make a move on her, and he's like, oh, I really like you, you know, and this and that. And she puts her hand on his mouth and is like, that's not gonna happen. And then after that, it's kind of like, that's when he's like, oh man, like, you know. And then that's when he does the you know, hand in the water and the scuba gear and all that other bullshit. And like, that's just him reacting to getting fucking shot down fucking horribly. So it's weird because there's that dichotomy, right? Because even the actor says there's guys that tell him, dude is the most annoying motherfucker ever. Yeah. I want to smack him, like, you know, and this and that and the other thing. And then there's other people, probably a little more like me, that lean into the whole, like, oh, I kind of feel bad for that fucking guy. Like, I get what it's like to be rejected or what it's like to feel like you're unpopular or what have you, right? And you just want to be noticed by a girl you like, and you totally get shot down, right? And it's like, so there's probably, you know, two distinct camps that come to that, right? And I think the only thing maybe against that, and, you know, to me, I think there's a lot of, you know, they're kids, right? So there's like, or teens or whatever you want to call them, right? Like, there's a lot of non-communication, right? Because I feel like maybe if somebody had, like, you know, not that she's very forthcoming with it, but I think if it had been communicated to the group, like, oh, Chris is coming back to a place that she's slightly traumatized by and she's trying to get over some fears, like, let's all not, you know, fuck with her, you know,
yeah.
her head trip, right? But I don't think anybody really knows that but the boyfriend. And so you know, I mean, it's kind of weird. I feel weird dissecting this because I feel like when I originally watched this, you know, it was just kind of like, oh, it's a Friday the 13th movie. You know, it's like Jason shows up and kills some dumb fucking kids, you know, and that's the end of it. And in some ways, like, if you apply, like, I mean, they don't outright say this in Scream, but, like, if you start applying the Scream philosophy, right, it's like, yeah, Shelley did some stupid fucked up pranks, and that's why he gets killed. But I think the other girl, what's her name? I'm trying to think of her name now. It is, Vera. Vera was the girl that went in the VW bug with Shelley, right? Like, and I think the moral to that story is don't turn down nerdy fat dudes because you're going to get skanked by Jason with the fucking harpoon, you know? And it's like all that, or it's, you know, and you could argue, you know, the girl Debbie, she's all loose and is there to have sex, but she's also pregnant supposedly and all this other, you know, so it's like, okay, she's skeevy, so that's why she gets it. You know, the other dude's skeevy, and the you know, of course, the two hippies smoking marijuana and shit, like, that's obvious, they get skanked and all that, you know, so it's like the only person that's supposed to be, you know, pure and noble and I don't know, virginal or whatever, is supposed to be Chris, right? And she's also recovering from and I just noticed when they're in the convenience store, they got all these cool comics, yeah, like Master Kung Fu and Ghosts. And
yeah,
stuff like that. Yeah, so, but, you know, so, she's supposed to be the pure one, which is why she quote-unquote survives, but then there's, like, the alternate endings, but I don't know. That's the other thing that, like, always kind of bummed me out about Friday the 13th. I don't know how you feel about it, but, like, I don't like all these, like, fake-out dream endings that turn in. It's like basically they all end with the girls going back. You know, it's like they may be the pure, noble, virginal girl that follows all the Scream rules and they survive, but they only survive to be a basket case by the end of it. You know what I mean? And it's like, is that... I don't exactly know how to feel about that. Like, if the idea was it was too depressing to kill everybody in this movie, well, do you think I'm happy about her not getting killed but being a head case for the rest of her life? Like, you know, I mean, to me, I'm like, I don't see how either of those is a, you know, a happy ending or a positive option, right? Like, so there's that aspect. So I'm kind of like wondering, like, oh, you might as well have lopped her head off, you know, like, what difference does it make at this point? But I'm not sure how you feel about those things. Cause it's always, and that's always confusing because I think for me, coming from a, you know, I like Freddy more, pro Freddy thing. It's like, there's always so much thought put into, this is the dream world, this is the real world. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, there's no real thought put into those sequences. It's more like you're supposed to think it's the real world and you're like, holy crap, this thing happened. And then, you know, Mrs. Voorhees jumped out of the water, or, you know, Jason lopped her head off, or, you know, whatever happens. But then it's a fake out because, you know, it cuts back to the cops going, oh, that poor girl's traumatized, she's the only survivor, you know. And it's like, oh, so you just contradicted what you just showed us. And, you know, that's, you know, I guess you're just supposed to sort of go with it, right? And I'm kind of like, okay, you know.
The dream sequence in this one with Mrs. Voorhees, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, what? Wait, but how did her head get reattached to her body? Because you just, like, went out of your way to show that at the very beginning of this film. again, like it, at the beginning of this, they show the end of part two. I was like, wait, but that doesn't make any, oh, it's a dream. But like,
right.
Would Chris have any idea about Mrs. Voorhees or that she got her head cut off?
Those seem to be the common complaints, yeah. Right? Like, why would she know about Mrs. Voorhees? Why would Mrs. Voorhees' head still be attached? Why is Mrs. Voorhees pulling the I guess the other criticism I see leveled against this is that it is repetitive, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's funny because I still enjoy this movie, but I mean, I could see that. It's like, and the reason why I bring it up is because, I mean, Mrs. Voorhees jumping out of the lake is basically like Jason, like little kid Jason jumping out of the lake in the first movie. Like, it's just a redo of that scene with a different set of characters. And then I think this time I was kind of noticing, and you know, because we're trying to be critical about it or watch it with a critical eye and everything. And I've always liked this movie, and I've never thought of this before, but I kind of feel like Jason in this, like they try to give a bunch of credit, going, oh, Steve's so great, like he made Jason this ominous figure, and he was always in the background, and then you barely seen him, and it makes it more scary, and blah blah blah, and then you see. He's this big hulking British guy at the end, and it's so great, and blah, blah, blah. But in the back of my mind, all I'm thinking of is, this feels like a poor man's John Carpenter Halloween. Mm-hmm. Thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that Michael Myers is just there in the background, and the laundry is waving in the wind and everything. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, shit, like, John Carpenter did that way better. You know what I mean? Like in other movies. So there, you know, to me, I think, the major sell of Friday the 13th is pretty faces, you know, body counts. Like, I think this is touted as, at the time, it was one of the largest body counts for Jason. But it's funny to me, too, because it's not just, like, kids and camp counselor stuff. Like, it, you know, I think Friday the 13th was always willing to, you know, because, again, coming from the Freddy background as I was, you know, it's always, there are rules, you know, there's dreams, there's, he goes after the Elm Street kids. And even though I make fun of it, it's like, how many fucking Elm Street kids can there possibly fucking be? But, you know, they try to their best to stick to that, you know, mythos and those rules and regulations or that backstory. Whereas if the whole thing of Jason is he's going after camp counselors that caused him to drown, or his mother was, and then he in turn is carrying on her mandate or what have you, you know, then those bikers that get slaughtered, like they don't fit, right? The man and his wife, like to me, I'm kind of like, see, the Scream rules are like, don't eat donuts when the doctor and your wife tell you not to, otherwise you get killed by Jason. And then don't be a nagging bitch wife, otherwise you get killed by Jason. You know, it's like, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, what does that have to do with camp counselors? You know, nothing, right? Like, so it's like Jason will just kill whoever the fuck. Like, he doesn't, you know, it's like a squirrel could be there and be like, chip, 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 chip. And Jason's like, fuck you, squirrel. You know, it's like, what did you do, squirrel? You didn't make Jason drown, you know? It's like, what? You know, it's like Chip and Dale are getting killed, and they didn't have nothing to do with Jason drowning. You know, so it's like, that part of it, it's like, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I know a lot of the actors were saying, like, you know, it was not an actor-focused film. You know, it was more focused on getting the 3D shots and all that kind of stuff. I would imagine if I was an actor on a set like this, even though a lot of them on commentaries and interviews and things tried to be like, oh, this was so much fun, or this was a lot of fun. And I'm sure there were things about it that were fun. But I could imagine this being very frustrating if you were trying to actually perform or give a good performance. But ultimately, it was more about hitting your mark than anything else. You know, like, I could understand why that might be frustrating.
Going back to the character of Chris, do you want to talk about some of the religious stuff around her? Because, like,
yeah,
the first time I watched this, I remember thinking, like, okay, so her trauma is she had this argument with her parents. She ran off into the woods. She fell asleep. She woke up and Jason was there. He chases her, and then she blacks out. and she wakes up and she's back in her bed. And I guess there was a deleted scene where Jason rapes her, and they were like, no, this is going too far. We'll take that out of there. But the first time I watched this, I was like, well, what's something's wrong here, because Jason wouldn't just like carry her off and then leave her alive. I never understood that until, you know, you get on like IMDb or something and you go, oh, that makes more sense. I mean, I agree. Like, I'm glad that wasn't in there, because I don't know if you ever saw it, but there's a Hammer horror film. It's one of the Frankenstein movies where what's his name? Plays Grimoff Tarkin.
Oh, Peter Cushing.
Yes. Peter Cushing is playing Baron Frankenstein, and he's doing this thing, you know, he's trying to make a new Frankenstein monster, and then out of the blue, he just, like, rapes this chick, and it just comes out of nowhere. And I remember reading about this, like, he said he was very uncomfortable with the scene, he didn't like it, the actress didn't want to do it, she was against it too, but, you know, the people behind the movie were like, look, we want this in here, like, we need some titillation, we're going with this, and you're going to do it. And it just, it's one of those things where you're just like, okay, Baron Frankenstein will totally kill someone for body parts to make his new monster, but I just can't see him raping this chick. It just comes out of nowhere. And, you can tell, like, the way the actors talked about it, it left a sour taste in their mouth. And I kind of feel like if they had did this for Jason, it probably would have been the same thing.
I think that the only thing about that, though, is it does add, like, I feel like it all stems from the creative process, because if you go back to the start, right, they wanted the girl from 2 to reprise her role. Mm-hmm. They wanted her to come back to Crystal Lake and face her fears, or maybe they wanted to do a redo of Halloween 2 where she's in a hospital and Jason comes after her there or something like that. But the point is, there was already a movie with pre-established history with that character and Jason, so they were operating from that given statement. And then when that actress didn't come back and they create the new protagonist, it seems like they just decided to graft some of that onto this. It's like, okay, well, this new protagonist, you know, it's like, it's funny because, you know, when you watch it, you're kind of like, well, wait, was she in the previous movies? And then you're like, no, she wasn't in the previous movies. So why is she afraid of, you know, why is she afraid of coming back to the cabin and coming back to Crystal Lake and what, like, why? And then you know, over the course of the movie, you find out, okay, like you're saying, she got somehow attacked by Jason or had some trauma with Jason. But you're like, they're not, you know, she's like, I don't remember. And making it more vague, I mean, I would think, you know, it's kind of like people that argue, oh, well, Black Canary didn't get raped in The Longbow Hunters, or, you know what I mean? And it's just kind of like, I don't know, man, that seems naive, right? Like, I mean, you can say that they sugarcoated it a bit by making, like, your interpretation is probably just as valid, right? Like, but I feel like it's kind of, I don't know. To me, it's more open-ended. Like he must have done something, right? Like, I mean, you know, but then I sort of tend to think about what you're saying. Like, why would he do any of that? Like, why wouldn't he just, you know, kill her? Like, why, you know what I mean? Like, he's never molested anybody before. Like, so why is he starting now? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's not enough to me. It's so vague and there's not enough information that it seems like that's why that aspect of the film is a bit clunky to me.
Yeah.
You know, and since I think the rules that Jason does have are either ignored or ill-defined, then it makes it harder to come up with a no prize, right? Because I don't know what the no prize is. He was just horny that day, like, or if you're saying, like, oh, there's no way he would do that, then it's like, then why does he just, you know, return her? Did it remind him of his mother? Like, did it, you know what I mean? Like, did she have, like, I'm not a camp counselor t-shirt and that was fine. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Like, I need some kind of like 6-issue miniseries by John Byrne to fill in the gaps here.
Dude, John Byrne, he'd take care of it. Cornrow Cousins, and he'd be all over that. He'd work it out for us. Some convoluted explanation where, you know, plane flights were involved and people were exploded, and you know, there'd be some good explanation there. If Jason goes in reverse fast enough with his machete, the rainbow starts. You know, like all that good stuff. I don't know. And part of me is like, this kind of movie, I mean, it's, you know, we're saying all this, but I mean, I don't think it's designed for you to think too damn much about it. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was funny because I was looking and in the novels, the boyfriend's name is actually mm-hmm. Derek, and it's spelled like my name. And I was kind of like, oh, and then they said the reason why they changed it to Rick was they wanted it to be monosyllabic when mm-hmm. she calls out to him, you know, when he's getting killed off to the side. And like, see, that to me, I think exemplifies, you know, why you're not supposed to think about things too much. It's just they just wanted a vibe and a syllable and a feel, you know what I mean? And it doesn't have to make logical sense, you know, like it's supposed to be what it is, you know, like, and like, I think some of it was like they were coming up with interesting casts of characters, like, you know, to make all these people sort of distinct before they start offing them, you know, kind of like when you're building like a superhero team, you know, except for it's with kids and teens and jocks and nerds and hippies and whatever, right? Like, it's just to create this kind of ensemble of people that Jason's gonna take down or whatever. And I mean, that kind of continues with the fourth movie for sure. I kind of feel like this is the first movie where they did do that pretty successfully, you know, like, if that makes sense. But I don't know. I don't know what else, you know, like, there's other characters in this, but I guess they all have interesting death sequences. But again, that repetitive thing, you know, it's like the one who plays what's her name, Debbie, I guess, it's the lady who went on to become the newscaster, Tracy Savage or whatever, like, her death is basically similar to how Kevin Bacon ends up dying in the first movie, right? It's a knife under the,
it's like poetry, it totally rhymes.
You know, I think modern wackadoos would have a field day with how Rick greets Chris in the beginning. He nearly strangles her, kisses her, and then says, "Did I do something wrong?" And I'm sure all the modern women would be like, "Oh my God, fuck yes, you did!" You know, like, whatever, right? Like, and then by the end of it, she's apologizing. So I'm sure their brains would be melting if they watched the first 3 minutes of this movie or whatever. But I mean, I think it's a little funny, but otherwise I don't really care about it too much. It's kind of like, is Friday the 13th really the venue to talk about like someone with victim trauma? Probably not, but they decided to do it anyway to sort of spice it up. So it's like, it's just spice, and it's not actually meant to address any of the problems or provide any real solutions. So I guess if you look at it from that vantage point, you just kind of, again, I don't think these movies are meant to be analyzed or you're supposed to think too much about them, but I'm sure people do have, you know, certain things they like to pick apart in these movies or whatever.
This movie has something in it I can't stand no matter what I hear it in. It's a pet peeve of mine. It drives me crazy. I can't stand in a movie or a TV show where you can hear someone going to the bathroom. I don't know why. If I say it's tasteless, does that sound weird because this is a horror movie? But it just something about it, I'm just like, is that necessary? Do I need to, like, hear the guy taking a whiz, or do I need to hear him on the toilet?
So did you fist pump when Jason like fucking macheted him right down the hoo-ha when he was walking upside down?
That's such
whatever?
A brutal kill. I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, whoa, yeah, whoa, yeah. What? Go back, what happened? Like,
it's just damn. Like
he just folds up and it's just, you know, the blood, it's like the blood drips on the camera. And then, you know, there's an old Alfred Hitchcock movie, I think. It's called The Apartment. And there's a scene where, like, there's a bunch of people on the second story of this building. And the way he filmed it, he made, like, the floor transparent. And you can see.
Oh, like they did in this scene.
I always thought that was weird. And I remember when I saw, like, that film, you know, years later, I was like, I wonder if they got that from there. Because it's so unique.
Yeah, I almost might argue, just like the John Carpenter reference, like that, you know, Miner probably was trying to steal from the best, right? Like, so if people are saying it's, you know, I I've seen reviews where they say, oh, this is, you know, this is derivative, I think was what the review said. But it's like, hey, you know, I think it works and makes this movie interesting. Yeah.
When it comes to horror movie reviews, I only listen to, like, fellow horror fans. I don't even pay attention to any websites or anything.
Right.
I'm like, oh, what do normies know about, like, Friday the 13th Part 7? They don't know nothing.
I was trying to remember, like, because it's been so long since I've seen the Padalecki movie or whatever, but, like, I remember there being the argument, like, that it could, like, fit in between some of these movies. Like, isn't he looking for his sister in that movie?
I think so. I've only seen that movie, like, twice, and it's been a long time.
I was trying to remember, like, is the sister in this movie, or is the sister in the second movie? Or I was just trying to remember, because I'm pretty sure the sister he's looking for, if you're trying to fit it within these original movies, it's got to be one of the girls in one of these movies, but I couldn't remember who it would have supposed to have been, you know? I guess it would have had to have been Debbie, because if Chris lives, and I can't see Padalecki's sister being Vera Sanchez, you know? So I was like, I guess, I mean, unless his sister was the pothead, but I don't think so. I don't know.
What sticks with me specifically is the iconic villain. You know, I mean, Jason Voorhees, you say Jason Voorhees or Darth Vader, or, you know, you can think of 10, 20 villains that just stick with you, and you're kind of interested in, like, what do they do next? What else kind of havoc can they wreak? And so it's definitely all about Jason.
But that seems odd, because it seemed like Padalecki was like, my sister was a pure, wonderful person. And I don't think any of these people are quite that, except for maybe Chris, even though she's kind of got her own baggage and head trips or whatever, you know. Of course, I guess I would be pissed too if I let some kids borrow my car and they came back with, like, a broken windshield and all that shit too. But yeah, that always kind of, I thought, was funny too, because I'm like, that biker gang seems kind of out of place in Crystal Lake, but I don't know. That's why I've always thought, like, Friday the 13th has its Either it's Wild West, you know, like there's not a whole lot of rules with Friday the 13th. Like, you know, to me, it's tantamount to, like, a bunch of Martians showing up at the convenience store. But, you know, that it's just, you just go with it, you know. It's like, okay, you know, Marvin the Martian's at the convenience store and he wants the wallet, you know, like, okay, like, I guess so. You know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, but all right, like, we'll go with it.
I just imagine they're like, doing some, like, East Coast drive. Maybe they drove up from Florida and they just stopped to get gas and some beer, and they just wanted to, like, screw with somebody. I don't know.
See, like, I'm glad you're here, because that's at least a good no prize. Like, they too were doing a road trip. I just felt like the way they talked, like, it was like they were like local somehow. Like, they're like. But I guess I think your explanation is much more logical. You know, it makes more sense. Like, that makes my head not stop hurting, but it kind of puts my head at ease, you know, like a little bit, because it's like it doesn't hurt as bad, you know, so like that's probably a good thing. And I guess I'm just gonna keep hammering it, but I think the reason why my head hurts is this movie's not designed to be, like, heavily scrutinized, you know. Like, you're just supposed to watch it and kind of have fun with it, I think, you know.
That's how I approach most of these films. They're just it's fun to, like, look at the continuity and pick it apart, because, you know, like, you know, you and me, we're comic book nerds. We like that kind of stuff. But for the most part, I can just look at it and enjoy it and just kind of, you know, move on to the next one.
I think some of the things that bug me, like, in this movie is, like, how do they mistake the gigantic, lurch-looking British guy who's Jason in this movie for fucking Shelley? Like the hippie guy does it, and Vera does it, where they're like, Shelley, what are you doing? And I'm kind of like, what? Dude doesn't have a build that looks anything like... I mean, the whole point of Shelley is he's supposed to be fat and short and unpopular, and I'm kind of like, this guy looks like fucking Lurch. Like, come on, they don't even have the remotely the same body type, but you're confusing them? Like, come on. Like, this is ridiculous. You know? It's kind of like, oh, look, is that you, Mole Man? And it's the fucking, Dragon Man or some shit. And I'm just like, what? What the fuck? Like, are you serious? Like, how can you confuse the fucking outlines of those guys? Like, they don't even look anything like one another.
Who's
you know?
That Pokemon? I don't know.
Yeah. Who's that Pokemon?
Fuck!
That's all of these guys in this to get killed are that guy. It's Charizard. Nope. Oh shit.
Who's that Pokemon? It's Jason fucking Voorhees. That's what's going on.
I do think it's funny that the guy they brought in to tweak the screenplay had, like, disagreements about the casting. Like, oh, all these people are too pretty. Like, they're all, like, CW pretty actors and actresses versus what he thought he was going for. But I'm just kind of like, I don't think that guy understood, like that was the whole point, right? To see, you know, some of these guys, like, just be, you know, pretty people that get hacked by Jason, you know, like that to me seems to be an essential part of the formula of the franchise, you know.
Off air, we were talking about the novelization. I know you said you didn't read them, but were you ever like interested in reading novelizations of horror movies like when you were a kid, maybe?
I'm trying to remember. I may have had something to do with Freddy in a novelization. I'm trying to remember, like, because it's one of those things where I think if I saw the cover of the paperback or something like that, it might trigger some nostalgic memories. But it's like, I think the paperbacks I had were more, you know, science fiction or comic book related or whatever. You know, like, I remember having paperbacks of V and Star Trek and Star Wars and things like that, and I, you know, maybe things like Superman and you know, kind of related type novels and stuff like that, but I don't know. I mean, for sure I don't think I would have had any Friday the 13th novels, but it's possible if there was some kind of novel adaptation of a Freddy movie, I might have keyed in on that, but I honestly don't remember.
A lot of them are actually pretty expensive these days. Like, I know the Halloween novelizations are probably the most expensive ones.
Okay. I mean, I guess that makes sense because like everything else, like that wasn't, you weren't putting those in Mylars and bags and saving them, or they weren't wall books or whatever, right? Like, so that's that, and I'm sure for the people that read those, you know, at whatever age or time they read them, where it had a big impact, right? You see the cover to it and go, ooh, or ah, or whatever. Like, I remember, I don't know if he's ever found it or not, but I remember, you know, Rob Kelly was looking for the paperback to, I think it was like Clue or something like that. And it's like, again, just like you were talking about, it's one of these like ridiculously astronomical price things, you know, and so, you know, it's like that, I guess, is just the way of things, right? Because most people probably read it and chucked it, or read it and, you know, maybe did not treat it well, you know, dropped it in the water, like, like Shelley's wallet or something like that. You know what I mean? Like they just kind of, you know, like folded it and put notes on it and put the grocery list on it. And so there's, you know, it was disposable, so they didn't care about it. And so I'm sure to find a decent looking copy of it or whatever is probably something that's difficult to do. You know what else, like, you know how you say, seeing people pee or hearing people pee on screen is something that bothers you. You know what bothers me about this movie is, and it's funny that I say that, cause I did, well, not entirely true. I had socks on, but I did go outside in the backyard with my socks on, but you know what, and maybe that will tell you where mm-hmm. I'm going with this, but there's lots of scenes in this movie with people with bare feet and they're walking in the water or walking on hard rocks and all this other shit. And I'm always kind of like that. I think it works in Die Hard because he's not supposed to be like comfortable. Right. And like, that's supposed to be the whole point. Like he's caught with his pants down, you know, like, so, you know, and then, you know, it causes more problems later where he's like, he has to walk on glass and all that, you know, all this other stuff. And he's got bare feet. And there's a lot of shots of bare feet in this where people are walking places. And I always feel like, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's like, I would much rather, like, even if I was on the fucking run from Jason with the machete, I would still like stop a few minutes to put on socks and fucking shoes. Like, I don't fucking care. Like, because I know that's going to fuck with me later.
Well, the one that irritates me in this movie is, like, the stoner dude goes to the basement to flip the breaker. He's barefoot, and he's standing in water, and he's about to touch the fuse box. I'm just like, yo, okay, like, I guess that makes sense because he's a stoner, because no one with, like, you know.
No one with half a fucking brain would yep. do anything like that. What? I guess since we're busy scrutinizing this and doing what we do, right? Like, in the opening scene, it's definitely like there's a couple and they live in a house, but they also run a supermarket, I guess, or a trade store or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what that is, but you know. Because he was eating the donut and there were all those fruits around and all that other stuff. So it's like, okay, they have some kind of, you know, convenience store or market store or something like that. But and it's got the Crystal Lake sign. But it's like, I don't know. I'm just trying to wrap my head around, like, you know, again, because there are no rules in this, right? But it's like, it's Crystal Lake, but it's not Camp Crystal Lake, right? Like, Is that the correct, yeah. like, does that make yeah, sense, right? Like, because they're not going to the right. camp itself. So again, that's something that sort of, you know, Jason skirts his own rules, right? Because you would think typically, right, Jason would be the protector of, I know that's funny, he's not really protecting, but you know what I mean? Like, he's the champion of Crystal Lake, or what, you know what I mean? Like whatever he is, right? He's the menace of Crystal Lake, or you know, whatever you want to call him, right? But like, to me, it's kind of like, I guess it's not, because Crystal Lake is Crystal Lake, right? Like I was trying to compare it to like maybe Gotham and Bloodhaven, but like, I guess it's still Gotham City, but I'm trying to think of what, I guess if it was like, you know, Gotham Square versus Crime Alley, or I don't know what, but like, you know, it's like some, to me, this seems like a satellite of where he normally would be, but yet since the people are there to get killed, he's definitely there in full force, you know?
The way I understand it is Crystal Lake is like the name of like a little small town somewhere out in the country, and there's an actual Crystal Lake that you can go to where there's a camp.
Okay.
It's kind of like where I live. Like, there's an area called Keokie. It's this little small, not even a town, but it's just like this little small area near the mountains, and then when you go further on, there's a Lake Keokie.
I guess maybe what I'm confusing it is, and maybe this is a better analogy, but it's like there's Gotham City and there's Arkham Asylum, right? Like, and it's like, I guess I'm thinking like, oh, well, isn't the Joker always at Arkham Asylum? And I guess that's not really true, right? Like, the Joker can go all over Gotham if he wants, right? Like, so maybe I'm trying to put more limits on Jason than actually exist. So, I guess that girl Debbie is supposed to be pregnant because she has that line about pregnant women always pee and she's always getting out of the car to pee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that so? Then Jason killed the pregnant woman.
Yep.
Okay. And is dipshit who peed that annoyed you, is he the father or is he just some other dude that she's fucking?
I always assumed that was the dad, but.
Oh, okay. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Like, these people are supposed to have loose morals, right? Like, so I don't know. Like, that's why I asked, because I didn't know for sure. Like, is he the father? Is he just, you know, thinks she's a hot piece of ass? Like, and he's gonna bang it before she squeezes a little puppy out? Like, I don't know. I have no idea. Like, yeah.
That makes me think. I remember watching Alien versus Predator. Requiem, is that the name of that?
Oh yeah, that
scene. Whoa.
Yeah,
I remember that was a date movie I took this girl to.
Oh Jesus! And yeah.
Anyway, it was actually her idea because she liked those movies. She was like, "Oh man, we gotta go see that." And I was like, "Okay, you know, you don't have to twist my arm." So we went, and then it got to that scene, and then all of a sudden she's like pulling out my arm. She's like, "Let's leave, we gotta go," and I'm just like. Why? Because of this one scene, she's like, yes, it's horrible. I'm just like, if you want to leave, like, there's the door. I'm not leaving. Like, I've never walked out on a movie. Like, there's been lots of movies where I wanted to leave, but I'm like, you know what? I paid whatever I paid. I'm going to finish this thing. I may never, ever watch it again, but I'm going to finish it.
You're going to get what you pay
yep,
for.
Even if it's awful.
Do you think Jason killed that skunk?
I hope he'd
be like, what did that skunk do to you, Jason? Did it help you drown? Did it make the lake stinky? Like what did the skunk do?
Do you think he also like took the goldfish out of its aquarium and squished it?
I mean, that sounds like a Jason thing to do. I mean, I could kind of see Jason doing that. What if Jason, you know what I could kind of see Jason doing? Like, what if he took the goldfish bowl and like smushed it all over somebody's head and like slowly smushed their head but also drowned them at the same time, and the goldfish was still in the bowl. Like, that's what I could see Jason doing. Like, he's such a brutal force of nature that he fits shit in things that shouldn't fit, so I could see him taking the goldfish bowl, sticking it over somebody's head but smushing them to death and drowning them to death, all while the goldfish is like, fuck. Yeah, like,
what if when he like had Chris cornered in the van, you know, he's like got his arms reaching through the window. What if he like just like opened his hand and put the goldfish in her mouth?
Yes.
Like out of nowhere.
What is this? Is this your like? I mean, maybe it's not, but like of the looks of Jason, right? Like, I know you kind of said you didn't quite get why he was only looking out of one eye hole when he had the bag sack look or whatever, right? And that obviously did not work, because by the time they got this movie, they did the hockey mask, and then that became the most iconic, you know, visual of Jason. But like say when these NECA figures come out and things, like is there a preference you have? Is it like, oh, I want the one from part three, or is it something where you're like, no, I want the one for like part seven, because he's like all zombie looking and super ripped and cool, or, you know, because it's Kane Hodder versus this British guy? Like,
yeah, I like the part seven look a lot, and I also like part six. You know, just the kind of like you said, like the more kind of like zombie look where you're like, okay, like he's got like his ribs exposed, you can see like a little bit of his face because part of the mask is gone, and you can see the axe. You know, he gets the axe to the head in this film, like that carries on through each one, like
each subsequent
film. He's got the mark in his head, and even in most of the mask. Yeah, I like the part six or the part seven look. That's be my look.
I mean, I think the only other thing I can talk about with this that I think is fairly obvious, but I know they mention it in the Camp Crystal Lake and some other things, but they talk about how, you know, this was not really shot on the East Coast, and like you can tell, like when they go to pick up Vera, like there's palm trees, like you can tell they're in LA somewhere in California or whatever. So like that's something that always kind of, you know, but I mean, I guess that's true of like Halloween too. Like yep. They're not supposed to be in Los Angeles, but you could kind of tell from certain shots where you're like, oh, they're in Los Angeles or they're in California somewhere or whatever. Like they don't, you know, as hard as they try to, you know, make it up that it's not, like there's usually some hint or something that like sneaks through, you know, where you can tell.
It's the magic of the movies.
Right. I mean, I think these type of films go back to kind of what I always call the Oz effect. Like, you don't really want to relate to people that are about to get killed by Jason. You know?
Yeah.
Like, so.
I mean, I have sympathy for Shelley, but yeah, I definitely don't want to end up like him.
Well, you know, I think I have sympathy for Rick. You know, he's trying to help out Chris or whatever. But, you know, although I'm sure, like I said, some people will put 2022 judgment on that guy, but I thought he was trying to be a good boyfriend or whatever, you know, despite a lot of problems that she was having. And then, you know, again, I guess his thank you is to get his eyeball popped out and die, you know, like, so you're like, oh fuck. And he didn't even get any, like, so what the fuck did he do? Like, see, does he doesn't seem to follow. I mean, is it just 'cause he's a dude? Like he doesn't seem to follow any Scream rules, right? Like he did not get it on with her, right? Like, so presumably, like, I mean, you know, and it's not like it's, you know what usually happens in these movies is the good girl, right? Like, she's got problems, you know, she can't devote all her, you know, I don't know, sexual energy to this boyfriend, right? Like, and the boyfriend is trying to be like, hey, I'm here to help you, baby, like I'm here to help you, but then the minute some other hot mm-hmm. piece of ass comes along, he bangs that, and then thus that's the justification for Jason to like kill the guy. But this guy didn't go after any of the other girls in the cabin or anything. It's not like he banged Vera on the side or something like that because Chris wouldn't put out or something. You know what I mean? Like that's not what happened here. It's just, he was trying to be a good boyfriend. He may have pressed her a little too hard at certain points, but I think it was all out of, you know, I think he was genuinely concerned and was, you know, yeah, he had some ulterior motives, right? But for the most part, he wanted to help, right? Like, so I was like, what? You know, I mean, the worst of his ulterior motive was he wanted some kisses and wanted to get banged at this fucking log cabin. But it's like, shit, if I was at fucking Camp Crystal Lake or wherever the fuck they are in the cabin, like, you know, I mean, that's, you know, that would be maybe an expectation, right? Like, you know, you're going away for a cabin getaway. Like why wouldn't you expect that? So I don't know that that's that nefarious, other than her problems, which you might have to be like, oh, okay, well, she's dealing with some shit, so maybe that's not an option, you know, for this cabin trip or whatever, but, you know, whatever.
Jason knew that if he didn't kill that guy, he would at some point in his life get laid, so he had to kill them.
Okay. Is that the Minority Report of Jason? Did he do the fucking swoosh, 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 and know that eventually he was gonna put the moves on some of these girls at the cabin besides Chris, and just figured, fuck it, I'm gonna beat him to the punch?
He's proactive, Derek.
Okay. I'll you know, at this point, I'll go with anything, man. I think everything you're telling me is a no prize. You know, fucking guy gets thrown through a fucking window, and he didn't even bang any other chicks.
That was brutal.
Fucking loses an eye.
I hadn't seen this one in a while, and there's, I think they do that trick in part four as well. Like, people get thrown through movies.
Yeah.
I think I, like, confused them, and I was like, wait, this is a long shot. Something's going to, oh, there it goes. Like, I kind of forgot for, like, a few seconds. I was like, wait, what's this shot setting up?
Well, they talk about how the poor son of a bitch stunt guy, like, you know, did it like 700 times and kept fucking himself up and everything. And it didn't sound like he was getting paid that much to like destroy his body, but I guess that's how this shit was back then.
Like,
you know,
I kind of wish they could have filmed that in 3D, like him flying through the window, like towards the camera. I'm sure that would have been, they couldn't have like slowed him down. He would have hit the 3D thing or something. Like,
yeah, like that probably would have put the camera itself in jeopardy, I would think. But,
like that would be a really cool shot. Like you see like static shot of the window, and then all of a sudden, boom, and it's coming right towards you. You're just like, oh my gosh.
Well, either that or it'd be like shitty because they wouldn't use a stuntman or a real person. They would just use like one of those Kakita dummies they throw off the fucking mountain, and the dummy would have to like hit the camera just right.
Yeah, like in the Three Stooges.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think if I recall, I mean, I've since sold them, but I think of the NECA figures that I ended up buying, I think I did buy the, and I don't know, it was my favorite, but I think I did buy the one from number 3, I think, just because it was convenient. It was like, oh, I at the time, I was like, I want a Jason, and I was like, oh, number 3, like, that works, you know, like, that's a pretty good look for Jason, although I think I am slightly fascinated by the Kane Hodder, you know, kind of swamp drench, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, jumpsuit that's all ripped up. Like, I kind of dig that look too. But, you know, but this one works for me. I mean, he you know, like I said, he looks like Lurch. He's tall. He's pretty intimidating. You know, like he works as Jason for me. I mean, he definitely works better than Sackhead Jason or whatever they call him. You know, like that guy always was kind of like, I don't know, like he seemed kind of like a doofus, whereas this guy, like, you know, this guy doesn't quite seem like a doofus to me, you know, like, it's like, you know, he kind of seems like a threat. So
that little bag look from part 2, I always thought it was a little, I don't know, not lame, but it's just kind of like a weird look. But then, you know, watching more movies since then, I'm just like, oh, it kind of feels more like The Town That Dreaded Sundown. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
No.
Well, basically, the killer in that movie, he has, you know, something that looks like a sack over his head, but he has 2 eye holes.
Oh, okay. Well, he must have better line of sight vision, huh?
Yep. It's too bad some fan, like, went to the house and lit a fire in the chimney and ended up burning down the place.
Oh, is that how that house got on fire? Oh, okay. I knew that house burned down, but I didn't realize it was because some wackadoo guy went there and accidentally lit it on fire or whatever. That's unfortunate. You know what we should talk about, and we haven't yet, and I'd feel terribly remiss if we hadn't. You know the one thing I unabashedly, unequivocally love about this film?
What's that?
It's the opening, like, beat, the bum, bum, bum.
The disco hot ice, yeah, I like that. Bum, bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum, bum. Like, that's pretty awesome. Like, that's, I think that's, like, one of my favorite things about this film. Like, so. And some of these people, man. She's just running away and bonks her fucking head. Like, just funny shit that happens in this movie. I guess the climax, you know, like the whole, you know, the final battle in the barn or whatever, like, that's interesting. Like, do we want to talk about, I guess, the different endings and all that kind of stuff? Because it's like, I guess in this theatrical release, right, she has the showdown with Jason, she tries to hang Jason, they've set up that little hay lifting rope or whatever, so they hang Jason, or she hangs Jason, hanging Jason doesn't work, and then you think, oh no, she's doomed, but then the black biker guy from before, I guess him getting smashed, his head smashed in like 7 times or whatever, didn't do him in, so he's there with a bloody, you know, mess of a head, but he's still there. And then Jason chops off his hand, and then I'm trying to remember. Then at that point, that's when what Chris runs away, I guess. And then that's when you're left wondering, like, why doesn't Jason go after Chris, and why is there a, you know, that whole dream sequence, and like that dream sequence, like, it's not only weird because I know Mrs. Voorhees popping up out of the thing is weird because you're like, why would she know Mrs. Voorhees? You know, I know some people argue like, well, she must have been a resident, like she must have heard the stories, but I can see from people's perspectives that are like, why would she even know about Mrs. Voorhees? And that in and of itself is kind of weird. But then, you know, that scene where like Jason is maskless and he's just looking through like the, what is it, like the attic window or whatever it is? Like, that's such like a, like, that's such a weird fucking scene to me. It's all urgent and everything, but it's like, why is he in the fucking attic? And why is he looking out? Like, I don't know. It's just so goofy, you know? Like, what are you doing with my mom in the river? Oh, you know, like, what? I feel like, it's funny because I think the reason why the mask works so much is because the minute he takes it off, he goes back to being a doofus. You know, it's funny because there's that scene where, you know, after she hangs him and she thinks he's dead, it's like super creepy. Like, and you're like, oh, is he still alive? Is he dead? And like, are you gonna risk walking past that guy hanging by a rope? But then when he finally, like, is like, oh, you didn't actually kill me, like, for some reason, I mean, I know it's part of the plot, and she needs to recognize that this guy in the hockey mask is the same guy who, you know, potentially, I don't know, assaulted, molested, whatever the argument is, but, you know, that she had this interaction with, that she's trying to get over currently, like, many years ago, that this is the same dude, but it's also kind of funny and awkward for him to like slightly pull off his mask and be like, hey baby, remember me, you know, like for just one minute. Yeah. And then put the mask back on. It's like, I mean, I understand like for Chris's arc, like she has to recognize it. Right. But like, wouldn't it have been cooler if like she took off the mask to see if he was still alive and then he wakes up, and then she's like, oh my fucking God. And then he puts the mask back on, you know, like, instead of it just being like that whole, like, peekaboo, motherfucker, you know, like, whatever, you know, like, why does he do that? Like, and again, I think that goes back to, like, if you listen to the commentary, the guy, the British guy who plays Jason, you know, said that the director, Steve Miner, was like, don't ask me for your fucking motivation, you're just a mindless killing machine. And so I'm sure when it comes to that line of thought, right, like, nobody came up with any motivation for him to take off the mask. He was just like, take off your fucking mask, like, it's part of the fucking script, like, take it off, you know. And that was basically it. But I guess that's, you know, and then that's all a dream, right? The Chris getting attacked by Mrs. Voorhees, like, that's all a dream. And then she wakes up and she's the only survivor, and then the police, you know, I don't know, take her off in the car, and she's kind of laughing, you know, I guess maniacally, or, you know, whatever, like, she's not over, you know, what just went down or whatever, like, she's forever traumatized or some such, and that's how it ends. But then I guess there was supposed to be, instead of it being Mrs. Voorhees that comes up out of the water, I guess there was supposed to be a scene where she gets her head lopped off by Jason, but they thought that was too, you know, too depressing a way to end it, even if it was just a dream sequence. And I guess that's referred to in the original novelization, that she, you know, she gets her head lopped off, but that's just a dream or something. And then they cut back to Deputy Schmuckface or whoever it is that's, you know, oh, the poor kid, you know, of course she's going to be traumatized, you know, or whatever. And that's how it, you know, how it finishes. I was trying to think if there was like some other, because it seemed like they were saying there were like multiple, like there were three different endings or something like that. See, I don't understand. Like some people say that there's an alternate ending where Ali survives. Like, so I don't know if that means like he survived getting his hand chopped off, like, or not. Because it says something like the first alternate ending has Ali survive. Chris opens the door to find Jason, but is scared by Ali, with both getting away. Soon after, the paramedics arrive, only to never find Jason's body. And they say it was retained in one of the novelizations. Maybe that's the 88 one, but I guess... Huh. Okay. So, I don't know if that means he didn't get his hand chopped off or what, but... Are there... It's weird, because I would ask, like, what of those endings do you prefer? But, like, I kind of feel like the fact that most of them are just dreams, like... sort of negates my preference in general. Like I don't understand why these have to be dreams. Like if you're gonna have Mrs. Voorhees drag her down, if you're gonna have Jason lop her head off, like just fucking do it. You know, it's like you were worried that a dream that didn't happen was gonna be too depressing, like because it didn't fucking happen. Like it was just a cop out or a fake out or whatever. Like that's I don't know that is kind of weird. Like why is that? You know that's kind of a weird ending, so I don't know that I don't know that I'm in love with any of these endings, to be perfectly honest.
It's also weird they felt that like they needed to get a fool you moment in there and then proceed after that with reality.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely prefer the ending in the film where Chris survives. I mean, it's kind of like you say, it's like, well, she survives, but now she's Wacky Doodle, so that, you know, there it is. I mean, she's alive, but, you know, what he can do with that. I always thought, not long after Freddy versus Jason versus Ash came out, that comic, yeah. I always thought a really fun story would be to take some of these characters that survived some of the various films, like they would have had formed their own like survivors group where they could like talk about their experiences and bond. And then of course eventually, you know, Jason's gonna make his way there and they have to like, you know, work together, and you know, only some of the survivors end up surviving this final thing. But I don't know, I always had that idea, and I was like, that'd be a really cool, like, comic or movie or something. But
yeah. I mean, yeah, the I guess that Freddy versus Jason versus Ash was pretty good about bringing back, you know, characters from previous movies and all that kind of stuff.
Film and Water Podcast, a weekly show about movies old and new, hosted by obsessive movie nerd Rob Kelly and a rotating series of special guests. From sci-fi to horror, dramas to family films, comedies to adventure epics, we watch it all. The Film and Water Podcast is part of the Fire and Water family of podcasts, available weekly at fireandwaterpodcast.blogspot.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
All right. Well, I mean, if you haven't been driven completely insane in the back of a squad car, that was our coverage of Friday the 13th Part 3 in 3D. If you have any comments, questions, and or concerns, if you're concerned about the pregnant woman dying, if you're concerned about the manhandling of the boyfriend trying to help the traumatized girlfriend, if you're concerned about crazy bikers that may have been taking a road trip, you can email us at fanholespodcast@gmail.com. The backlog of our Fanholes Podcast proper episodes, which this is a episode of, can be found over on the fanholespodcast.blogspot.com. You can direct download all the episodes there. In addition to the proper show, we've got all kinds of other shows that you can direct download as well. We can be found on all kinds of social media. We're on Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We appreciate all the likes, hearts, shares, and retweets that we receive. And we can be streamed. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Spotify, and Amazon Music. So, until the next time, this is Derek, Derek WC, juggling apples in 3D. In 3D! Signing off.
And this is Justin, signing off.
bum, bum, bum.